the State of the Nation address. Do we have copies of that? Come in, Malcha. Yeah, it's a pity we couldn't get these copies earlier. So they are all new to us. I haven't seen it. It's just arrived now. But let's not ask why, but it has arrived now. And I think the researchers are going to take us through this document that they have prepared. But perhaps just before you take us through, I am a bit worried. Well, these are the issues that you people have picked up out of the State of the Nation address. That I'm worried. I didn't quite understand understand whether the allocation that was given to this ministry is befitting. So I don't know how we are going to deal with that. But if you look at this, it doesn't match the budget. I haven't gone through it, but I don't think it will match the budget. But let's go through it and thereafter we'll talk about the budget itself. But I'm sure when we talk about, perhaps also we are not in a very correct situation to talk about the budget. Maybe we need to get someone from Treasury to come and explain to us why this is the way we see it and so forth. But for now, can the research will take us through. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Chair, can I suggest something that maybe we give members 10 minutes to go through the documents, because all of us will just receive the documents now, and maybe we start at 10 if the House agrees.
Do you agree with that? 10 minutes would be fine. On this document, so we can be familiar with it, because we haven't seen it. Let's just take 10 minutes to read it through and try and understand. Yeah, that's right. Thanks for that. I was lost yet through mine, but it's fine. Just if I can quickly take us through. I just now we've got Carl and then Honorable Kiki.
Thank you, Comrade Chair. And good morning to all the members. Comrade, I'm a bit confused. This issue of youth is still appearing on our whatever we're doing. We really need clarity, because I don't think we're even supposed to read about them, since they are no longer falling under us now. I don't know, Comrade. It confuses me, this issue of youth, really. Yes.
Thank you, Chair. I must thank the researchers for the good work they prepared for the committee. Chair, I need clarity, Chair, before we get into the discussion. Actually, I'm not sure where we are as the ministry now.
because the I'm not sure about the budget that is going into our committee. First, number one. Secondly, our committee is not supposed to be within the presidency in this budget. Thirdly, we are going to debate. Are we going to debate during the budget vote number one, or are we going to have our own debate? But I need clarity that within now the budget, where do we fall as this ministry? So that I have a better understanding before we get into the discussions of this document.
Any more other questions? Can you take all of that? Okay, Honorable Dorothy. Okay, we'll have 1, 2, 3.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is a very little issue, but it's about both. Because I thought that the first speaker is right that we should not deal with youth, because it was quite clear what is out of our portfolio committee. And then the second one, I thought maybe we should concentrate on the agenda in terms of the budget and not address it now, because I think we will be given an opportunity to refer to the budget, because if I look at the agenda, there is no budget.
Remember, you're confusing me now. You're confused, and you turn your confused me. We do have an agenda in front of us. And Honorable Dorothy, I think we should deal with the agenda. That's what we are doing. Not unless we have different agendas. What is the first item there?
1, 2, 3, deliberations on the impact of the State of the Nation Address on the work of the committee, and consideration adoption of outstanding minutes and the annual report.
So where do you find fault?
I wanted to find whether we will be deliberating on the budget.
Yes. We won't, but then automatically, since we are dealing with the state of the nation, questions like the one Kiki is raising will come out, you know, because we are dealing with this. The state of the nation obviously goes hand in hand with the state of the nation. Honorable Robinson?
I may bring up a point later, but I think I'll just wait and see. Thank you.
This thing of youth need to be properly explained. I mean, the point is, are we still women, children, youth, and disability? Or are we women, children, disability? That's written. I mean, even in the title. Because if the title is still women, children, youth, and disability, and youth is taken out, but it is still in the title, that is itself confusing. And I also thought the youth has a debt somewhere, but generally speaking, we're still responsible for the youth. That could be something I missed in the explanation. So I'm just saying, please explain it properly.
Okay. Let's deal with Honorable Kiki's one. First, she wants to know whether the budget, are we dealing with vote one, or we have our own vote as well. To my understanding, I thought we have our own vote. We don't deal with, we are no longer in the presidency, so it won't fall under vote one. That's my understanding, not unless I have it wrong. But that's how I understand it.
Good morning, Honourable Members. Just to reiterate, in terms of our mandate, when the Parliament established this committee, it was established with, as Mr. Kekani had indicated, women, youth, children, and persons with disabilities. Then the ministry was established, and initially, yes, you're right, youth was included, but 2 weeks later, announcement was made that the National Youth Development Agency would now fall under the presidency with Mr. Shabani. But looking at our mandate, the NYDA and the ministry indicated to us that our mandate is split across two. We have oversight with respect to the ministry, and that is vote 7, but also within our title, Youth Remains. So we also have oversight over the NYDA, a specific section of vote 1 under the presidency. So under the presidency at the moment, it's written there, NYDA with a specific budgetary allocation. So in terms of a debate, we would have, yes, the ministry, vote 7 in and by itself, but under the, vote 7 for the ministry, but in terms of NYDA, vote 1, it would be the NYDA specifically under the presidency. So in terms of the concerns, yes, we're not merging the two. They report to two different entities, women, children, persons with disabilities to the minister. Youth in terms of the NYDA under Minister Shabani, which is the presidency. So to some extent we need to look at vote 1 for the NYDA and vote 7 for the ministry.
Is that understood? I think it's good. Is it understood, Kiki? No. Okay, let's hear why.
You know, for Chair, I think last year when we raised this matter, after the announcement that the youth is no longer part of this portfolio committee, it was the agency, youth agency, that explains to us that they account to this committee. But I was not happy even then with that response, because I think this we need to get clarity from the minister of what is it called, evaluation and monitoring. Because honestly, I don't know how, because we, as a portfolio committee, we are linked to the ministry, which is the Ministry of Women and all that. So I don't know how are we going to do it to be linked in different ministries, that is the presidency and the ministry that we are linked to. I think there is a mistake somewhere, somehow. I don't think it's supposed to be like that, honestly. Because now, meaning that you will be having, because at some stage we'll have to have this ministry to come to us as well as the same that the Ministry of the Children, Women and People with Disability come to the committee.
Okay. The next speaker, when we speak to this, let's speak towards, but also I don't think we all have an answer to this. I don't think we have an answer, but you advise, kick out. It doesn't make sense that part of the youth, this is the NYDA, only just them will come and account to us. It doesn't make sense. I mean, why should they come and account to us when we are told that they fall under the presidency? I don't know, but to me, maybe we need them to come and explain it to us as well. Honorable Marcus and Honorable Keka, let's try and move fast so that we can get to the agenda.
Yes. Chairperson, when it comes to the name of the committee, it is the mandate. And the mandate comes from the Rules Committee, whatever committee gives the committee name. And I think it will be the duty of the work within the committee to check whether this committee is still, you know, has still the same name that it had when we start with the committee. Because I know at provincial level, it is the rules that, you know, the formation of committee start there. So our work has to go back to the Rules Committee, and that will be through either through the Chief Whip's office or the Speaker because he's in charge of the committees. Thank you.
Honorable Kekana, I hope you are speaking to that, because I was also of the same view that if then the youth is no longer with us, then we need to go back to the mandate and change the mandate. That's the understanding. Honorable Kekana? And Honorable Robinson after that?
I actually just wanted to say I actually like it, because maybe we're putting emphasis on the youth. Remember, they say they are the most hit by unemployment and problems in the country. So if you've got two ministries that does things for the youth at the same time, that, and in fact, this is not unusual. Public works, for example, you do oversight for infrastructure, over transport, over water, ministry, several ministries actually, even public enterprises. About five ministries that we have to do oversight of. So it's not unusual. But I just think it's good. That ministry and the president will help us, unlike you who are just on our own.
Honorable
Robinson.
Thank you,
Chair.
I want to tend to agree with the last speaker. I said the situation is anomalous, but at the same time, I think it's a good idea that we keep an eye on what's happening in the national youth in YDA. Otherwise, who is going to be holding them accountable? If it's not with us, where is it going to fall? Which committee is actually going to look after that? And I think it needs to be checked up on. So I would say that we have the capacity, and as majority women, you know, we've got wide-ranging skills, so I'm sure we can manage.
But also, again, the ministry cannot do oversight on them. That's another thing. It can't. The committee must do it, you know. But we just need to get clarity so that we can find one another on this issue.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, members. Apologies again for getting the documents to you late. We had a bit of technical glitches this morning. What you've got in front of you is a pack with four documents and a presentation. Between the four of us, we've each compiled an analysis of the state of the nation in relation to women, children, youth, and persons with disabilities. And then we've put together the presentation just highlighting the key issues out of those four papers. So I'll take you first through an overview of what came out of the State of the Nation address, and then specifically in relation to each of the four groups. Firstly, if we look at the key priorities outlined in the 2010 State of the Nation address, there were five strategic priorities. Education and skills development, ensuring a long and healthy life for all South Africans, rural development and land reform, creating decent work, and fighting crime. If we look at the priorities between 2009 and 2010, there is an overlap in some of those issues. There were 10 in 2009, and there were five strategic ones in 2010. But to note, in 2010, there was a particular emphasis on youth and youth development throughout the president's address. What we've done for the purpose of this analysis is, as we agreed last year, the committees will work on a theme per year basis. And this year's theme for the committees is maternal and women's health, child survival and development. So we've looked at the analysis in relation to that theme. We have covered some of the other issues that have been raised in the State of the Nation, but specifically focusing on the impact of the State of the Nation address on the health, development, and survival of women, youth, children, and persons with disabilities. So in terms of the health commitments made in the State of the Nation address, the first one is that there will be a continued focus on the improvement of the healthcare system. To be achieved through the building and updating of hospitals and clinics, as well as through collaboration with and financial support from role players in the private sector and development institutions. The President highlighted the partnerships with DBSA and also the IDC as partners to look at improving and updating of hospitals and clinics. The second priority there was that the working conditions of healthcare workers will be improved. Thirdly, interventions to lower maternal mortality rates will be introduced. then measures and interventions to reduce new HIV infections as well as treat HIV and tuberculosis will be intensified. Infant mortality will be reduced through an immunization program. Health programs in schools will be reinstated, and preparations for the introduction of the National Health Insurance Scheme will continue. So those are the key priorities that have come out in terms of health. What I'll do now is go over specifically to the impact of these health commitments on the state of women's health. First, I'd like to highlight that although those priorities are commendable in terms of women, there's a need for more comprehensive action. It seems that in terms of women's health, it's focusing specifically on maternal mortality. But that cannot be the only issue. Especially from last year, the issue that we had around domestic violence, given the higher rate of crime against women in this country, what is being done in terms of the impact on the health of those women. And also, in terms of mental health of women, it was highlighted that one in three women, I think, suffer from postnatal depression. So if we're only looking at maternal mortality, what then are the measures being put in place in terms of other health aspects for women? So if we look at the very first one there that says improvement of the healthcare system, it's an important priority for women across the country, primarily those who make use of primary healthcare facilities, and often they're subjected to inefficient service delivery at these facilities. The second one is interventions to lower maternal mortality rates. Now, the reduction of maternal mortality rates is one of the MDGs to which South Africa is committed, and we have to reach that by 2015, and there's been very, very little progress. In 2009, the presidency released development indicators, and it showed that in 1997, the maternal mortality ratio was approximately 81 deaths per 100,000 births. By 2005, it had increased to 400 deaths per 100,000 live births. Now, if we're saying that our health system is improving, why then do we have an increase in the number of women dying? Also, we know that the number of maternal deaths is compounded by the impact of HIV and AIDS, but in the fourth Saving the Mothers report prepared by the National Committee on Inquiry into Maternal Deaths, it indicates that almost 60% of maternal deaths were avoidable, and it was largely due to health system failure. And the largest contributions there was a lack of blood transfusion, followed by a lack of ICU facilities and a lack of appropriately trained staff, which means that women are dying at the very places that are supposed to help them, not because the programs we have are not good, but because in terms of infrastructure and services available, it's just not there for them. One of the things I forgot to highlight in the very first point in terms of improvement of the healthcare system was that the hospital revitalization program was introduced in 2003. Now, in 2008, it was indicated that 40 hospitals were being targeted as part of the program, but that has been downscaled to 27 hospitals in 2009 as a result of a reduction in infrastructural funding. So, again, if we're looking at improving services, how can we be downscaling the number of hospitals that are part of this program? And it then brings into question, in terms of commitments that have been made, how have we translated that into improving the services for some of the most vulnerable persons in our society? Also, one of the things there is that in terms of improvement in services, in government program of action for 2009, it highlights that the Human Development Cluster, or the Human Development Cluster rather, reports that a total of 145 hospital CEOs were enrolled for master's degrees in hospital management. That's very good and well in terms of improving the management of hospitals and also for the personal development of those CEOs, but how is that going to translate into an improvement of services at ground level for persons who are dying at the hospital door? So there's also, from what I've told you in terms of maternal mortality, there's definitely a need to upscale services in obstetrics and at your ICU facility. So maybe there's a need to look at where money is going. Maybe it would be better spent training people at those levels instead of master's degrees for hospital CEOs. In measures to reduce HIV and AIDS for women, the President highlighted in his State of the Nation address that the undertakings made on World AIDS Day will be implemented. Now, for women, these include access to antiretroviral treatment for all HIV-positive women with a CD4 count of 350, or those presenting with symptoms of HIV regardless of their CD4 count. Why this is important is that before they needed to have a CD4 count of 200 to be admitted or to receive antiretroviral treatment. So with it being 350 now, a lot more women will have access to antiretroviral treatment. And also, one of the commitments made was that all HIV-positive women will start treatment at 14 weeks of pregnancy to protect the baby. So there's definitely a positive benefit for many HIV-positive women in terms of increased accessibility and earlier intervention provision. In terms of the National Health Insurance Scheme, it's a very important priority for women in South Africa, particularly those from rural and impoverished communities, because if it's implemented, it could result in improved and equitable access to healthcare services. But the scheme has to be thoroughly conceptualized and managed effectively. At present, there's not much information as to what the progress is in relation to the scheme and when it will be introduced. In terms of infrastructural development and provision of basic services, we also link that in terms of health services, there is a link between access to basic services, because if people don't have access to sanitation and clean water, proper housing, those kinds of things, it makes them more vulnerable to infectious diseases. And particularly in terms of women, pregnant women, HIV-positive women, women caring for sick children, if they don't have access to basic services, that also impacts on the health of the whole family. So the President emphasized that the provision of housing, water, sanitation, electricity, waste management, and roads will be prioritized, with a total of $846 billion to be spent on public infrastructure over the next 3 years. What we don't know there is, in terms of female-headed households or poor households, how those will be prioritized in terms of having access to these services. In terms of the next slide, just looking in terms of the commitments for women's health, what will be the implications for the committee? Firstly, in terms of the National Health Insurance Scheme, there's a need to monitor, from a gender perspective, progress on the implementation of the scheme, particularly as it relates to women as beneficiaries. We need to know how will women be prioritized in the scheme, what is on offer for them specifically. Secondly, in reducing maternal mortality, as I stated, reducing maternal mortality is one of the MDGs, and combined with that also MDG 6, combating HIV and AIDS. So we need to track progress made with regard to achieving those health-related MDGs, and also to track budgetary allocations with regard to measures to improve maternal health. National Treasury, I think it was last week, did a presentation, last week or the week before, did a presentation to Parliament on the budget, and they indicated that 12.4 billion rand would be allocated towards treatment for HIV, AIDS, TB, and infant mortality. But there was no mention of maternal mortality, despite it being identified as a priority by the President in the State of the Nation address. In terms of revitalization and upgrading of healthcare facilities, need to request briefings and progress updates from all the relevant departments responsible for these programs. If we, like I said, with the downscaling of the number of hospitals from 40 to 28, we need to know why, which hospitals, who is on the program, and where things are being implemented, what are the timeframes and targets set for those. The President specifically mentioned that gender considerations and prioritization in all government programs is also a priority from this year. So then there's a need to monitor departmental budgets to ensure that gender considerations and targeted expenditure, particularly in relation to women's health and survival, is done. And the last one there, in terms of infrastructural development and basic services, we know there's a link between health status and access to basic services. So it's imperative that the committee continues to engage with the Departments of Transport, local government, and human settlements in terms of their prioritization of women in the service delivery targets. So that's it in terms of women. I will give over to Kashifa to look at implications for youth.
Thank you, members. As indicated with Crystal, what I'll be following through is again looking at the key issues, the five priorities that were identified, linking that to what's the youth perspective, what are the implications for youth, and then linking it back to the theme of survival and development. So the key priorities in which youth was specifically mentioned was around the creation of jobs for youth, as well as the President indicating in terms of the National Youth Development Agency, these structures need to be stepped up. And that needs to be expedited. In terms of the creation of jobs for youth, it's about focusing around encouraging the private sector companies to employ inexperienced young workers, as well as expansion of the public employment program. And that's mostly around local infrastructure, the literacy projects, home-based care, school maintenance, and ECD. Now looking specifically at what the initiatives were around job creation, and then saying what are the implications for the committee. So the initiatives was that there was encouragement for the private sector to look at employing inexperienced youth, that there should be more learnerships, and that in terms of the EWP, Expanded Public Works Program, that should be enhanced in terms of employing more youth, as well as talking specifically to the role of the National Youth Service. However, in looking at those initiatives, there are particular challenges. Labour brokering has been very much an issue for the past 6 months. And for inexperienced youth going into the private sector, what is the safety measure in terms of legislative provisions and policy provisions to ensure that youth are not exploited? And then in terms of the employment opportunities that they are offered, how sustainable are they? Are they able to acquire the requisite skills to eventually undertake permanent employment? And even though the opportunities created in terms of the 500,000 work, job opportunities which retained the 97%, how sustainable were those opportunities in the long term? So then what are the implications for the committee? Firstly, it would be about monitoring exactly how many sustainable work opportunities are there for youth. It's fine to say that we've got EWP, but what's the disaggregated data? Do we actually have per annum an indication of how many women, youth, and male youth are able to gain willful employment within EWP? Is it the same youth? Are they different youth? And where is it across the country? Because that would facilitate more effective oversight within your constituency as well. Linked to that is the issue of obtaining data on youth unemployment. In terms of sex, age, disability, province, and the respective industry, where are youth currently employed? Where is the private sector taking them in? Where are they not taking them in, and why? And then in terms of the Department of Health, Social Development, Basic and Higher Education, they should also be briefing the committee on measures related to brain drain. When we talk to issues of education later, we know there's been a particular emphasis around ensuring that we have more engineers, science teachers, math teachers, and so forth. But we've seen in the last 10 years there's been a massive exodus of healthcare professionals to more developed countries. So again, in terms of the creation of work, even though we're pushing education, we must be asking ourselves to what extent are we ensuring that safety net to actually retain the professionals within our country and not losing them abroad. Looking then at the youth machinery, in terms of the implications for youth, again, it's to monitor in terms of these structures which are to be expedited. Have these structures been set up nationally? Where's the National Youth Development Agency currently housed? Before we had provincial youth commissions, that's been no longer, it's been retracted with the repeal of the National Youth Provincial Youth Commission Act. But how does the NYDA expect to work across the country? Are they going to be establishing offices in provinces or at local government? How do we ensure that they actually are visible, that they don't rehash the problems of Umzimvubu Youth Fund and the NYC in the past? And two, that is really looking at the strategic plan, the budget, and the annual report. to examine the extent to which they've indicated what the objectives are per annum. How have they delivered? If not, why not? Turning then to education, I've split the issues in terms of higher and basic education. Around higher education, the president emphasized the importance of youth are unable to go into universities. How able are we as a country to facilitate further education and then pushing them into FET colleges? In terms of university students, their key challenge is often funding. Without funding, they're unable to pay their tuition fees. So there's been a particular emphasis on enhancing access to the National Student Financial Aid Scheme. And as I indicated previously, there's a particular emphasis on looking at enhancing professionals around skilled professionals, engineers, science and math teachers. Just to reiterate, the brain drain, that's something that we seriously need to look at. In terms of basic education, and again, if you're thinking about youth, we've defined them in the country as the age group between 14 to 35. So youth in terms of basic education is the 14 to 18 year old group. And in terms of basic education, the emphasis was attendance and punctuality. Youth should be in school on time, 7 hours a day. Quality assessments, that grade 9 to write independent and moderated literacy and numeracy tests. And that there's also an emphasis on increasing the pass rate. So as opposed to waiting till grade 12 to see why haven't we attained, we should be starting at lower levels. Then in terms of improving teacher effectiveness, looking at assisting them by providing daily lessons. And that overall that there should be an improvement in terms of education outcomes. That is to increase the number of grade 12 learners that are eligible for university admission to 175,000 by 2014. But what are the challenges in relation to basic education? In order to arrive on school at time, many students, scholars, rely on public transport. Issues of safe public transport is a key concern. If you look at the recent taxi violence outbursts, in terms of violence in schools, we've had numerous incidents reported in the media of stabbings, shootings, and bullying. And even though the Department of Education has a particular program around violence in schools, that too directly affects the extent to which we assume that when youth go to school, they should be safe. But often it's about will they survive before you even think about their development. And then in the context of poverty, Tatnim will briefly mention the issue around the child support grant and that it be gradual outro up to for all children. And that's particularly important because we're finding that the older youth are dropping out, and often they drop out for reasons around poverty. And the idea is the longer we keep youth in school, the better chance that they stand. And that is also linked to ensuring that young girls remain at school and the issue around teenage pregnancy and better outcomes for them. HIV and AIDS, that cannot be overlooked, both in terms of youth being at risk, and they are the most at-risk population, but also youth living in a community, in a family, in where they may be a relative with HIV and AIDS, and what the implications are for their caregiving. And then amidst all of that, needing also to focus on teacher morale, because bearing in mind that many teachers are youth themselves, and given all the challenges they face, what support mechanisms are there in place to assist teachers? Now looking at healthcare. Chris will mention several issues around what were priorities. Focus around maternal mortality, HIV rollout, and ART rollout, HIV prevalence. But I think it's important to note that at the moment, youth, and that's in terms of HIV prevalence, is one of the highest categories. So between 15 to 35, we have the largest amount of persons with a positive status. And for young women, it's the highest prevalence and also the highest death rate. So when we look at maternal health, we inadvertently will be looking at youth, because, and particularly young women. So there again, the link between we can't get away from youth. Youth is the most at-risk population. In the brief that I provided, one of the concerns which was raised by a survey that was done by the MRC, HSRC and Department of Health was that the younger girls engaging in sex at an earlier age and that we haven't seen come down in terms of statistics. So when we compared 2007, 2008, 2006, we found that for boys, the onset of first sexual relations has come down, but that's not the same for girls. The other important issue was that it's often younger girls who are engaging in sexual relations with older men. And again, understanding that in the context of poverty and power dynamics, if you think back to the issues of the public hearings and gender-based violence, clearly there's a link there too. And most importantly, which was alarming for me, was that knowledge around HIV, around youth at risk, had actually decreased. So then we need to ask ourselves, amidst all the money we're pumping in terms of programs, why isn't this working? Why has knowledge amongst the most at-risk population, particularly youth, decreased? So the implications for the committee is around monitoring the Millennium Development Goals. To what extent are we ensuring that maternal health has improved, maternal mortality has decreased? Prevention of mother-to-child transmission, ART, and then look at the National Strategic Plan for HIV and AIDS. To what extent is that youth-sensitive? Because if we are finding from research that the knowledge around HIV and youth has decreased, what needs to change? And over and above the importance of the HIV-AIDS pandemic, we also need to be thinking of youth health holistically. And to what extent adolescent health care services are accessible to the population? And linking back to the gender-based violence, the importance of mental health and psychosocial services. Now focusing around access to basic services. In summary, what we have seen is that there is no disaggregated data for municipalities to give us an indication within this municipality there's so many youth and so many of them actually have access to housing, water and sanitation. So in order for us to do oversight, how are we able to do that if we don't have the disaggregated data? And in terms of the service delivery protests, what has also emerged in research is often it's not municipalities that's the worst off or the highest unemployment, that it's a combination of factors, issues of migration, that it's often many youth coming from areas in search of employment opportunities, living in conditions in which may not have adequate housing, water and sanitation, and the disillusionment sets in. So in terms of what the implications are for the committee, as Crystal indicated, there's a link to access to basic services and health status of a population. One key tool is to look at issues around integrated development plans. So if we're going on an oversight to a particular area, for us to obtain that IDP and look at it and see to what extent are they prioritizing our target groups and what programs are currently placed and where are they allocating money. And then lastly, just in terms of rural development, land reform and fighting crime. In terms of rural development, particular emphasis was placed on improving services and land tenure in terms of 500,000 households, enhancing the comprehensive rural development program, the provision of infrastructure to support agricultural development, training of community members, and ensuring that out of the 160 wards, at least 60% of households in these sites meet the food requirements of their own production by 2014. But in looking at issues around rural development, we know the key challenges are poverty, unemployment, HIV and AIDS, but to mention a few, but also that there's mass exodus in terms of migration. Youth are moving. So as much as we're wanting to enhance subsistence farming, it's the extent to say, well, why aren't we able to retain youth in the rural areas? And if they are moving, why are they moving? In terms of fighting crime, the priorities were around reducing serious and violent crimes, increasing the number of police officials by 10% within 3 years, reducing hijacking, business, house robberies, as well as contact crimes. The key challenges in relation to that, again, thinking back to the public hearings we had last year, is youth, both as perpetrators and victims in terms of gender-based violence, an alarming number of awaiting trial prisoners and overcrowding in prisons, and the lack of disaggregated data to actually monitor youth in conflict. So that's youth in a nutshell. I'll now hand over to Tasneem to talk about children's implications on the stoner.
Thank you, Kashipa. Just to introduce myself, I'm Daphne Matthews. I'm a new researcher for the Select Committee. So that's me, and I'm really happy to be here. I'll be taking you through children as it related to SONA, and specifically basic services and healthcare. As Kashipa and Crystal has reiterated, the key priorities that the President had mentioned was health, crime, rural development and land reform, employment and education. You'll notice that that has been addressed in a paper, but for the purpose of this presentation, I'll focus mainly on health and issues around child protection. So I'll take you through that now. So as mentioned, child health is an important priority, and these are some of the priorities that were listed by the President: building and upgrading hospitals and clinics, and further improving conditions for healthcare workers, providing interventions to lower maternal mortalities to reduce new HIV infections and to effectively treat HIV and tuberculosis. Another key priority, reduce infant mortality through a massive immunization program. And then something that was new to the SONA, but which is not new to South Africa, is the reinstatement of the health programs in schools. And then finally, implement all the undertakings made on World AIDS Day relating to new HIV prevention and treatment measures. So while the list of priorities are long, the implementations are longer, unfortunately. Firstly, what I think is important to address is the implementation of school health programs. And we know that this was something that had been implemented in the past, but what I think is important is to drive the social, psychosocial services that these programs can provide. So looking at schools as nodes of intervention. So over and above maybe immunization services, that schools could potentially provide interventions in terms of violence and children in vulnerable states in terms of trauma. Also, what is important is close monitoring of the expanded program on immunization, which is the 2010 program. The implementation of HIV and AIDS and STI National Strategic Plan for 2007 to 2011. And what is important is to concentrate particularly on providing initiated testing, dual therapy in PMTCT, and universal coverage of antiretroviral therapy. On a broader level, what's important is to engage in empirical research. While we do have existing databases, these databases aren't as rigorous as they should be and don't provide up-to-date information as they relate to children. So while we do have data on diarrheal disease and the number of children that receive immunization, we need much more up-to-date and more rigorous data to make decisions in terms of children. And then to that end, ensuring that government departments have requisite information, data and statistics to be able to monitor and evaluate things. Another implication is assessing whether appropriate resources have been allocated to programs earmarked to address child survival. Okay. While the President mentioned, and Crystal and Kasha had mentioned basic services to children, well, basic services in general, as they relate to South Africans, electricity, housing, water. What I decided to focus on, and you'll notice in the paper, I've obviously unpacked it much more broadly, but for this presentation, a focus on water and clean water. Lack of basic services such as clean running water leaves children vulnerable in terms of achieving their full potential in terms of survival and development. Children are particularly vulnerable to illnesses associated with poor water, such as diarrhea and cholera. And unfortunately, while there has been programs rolled out to eradicate the use of the bucket system, there are still a high percentage of areas in South Africa that are still using the bucket system. And I've noted them in the Eastern Cape, 19.5%, in Limpopo, 11.6%, in the Free State, 10.6%, And in the Northern Cape, 10.5% of people are still using the bucket system. And it should be noted that of those areas I mentioned, at least 38% of our child population live in these areas. So while it's commendable that we are trying to roll out toilets and water pipes, it needs to be done at a faster rate, and it needs to be monitored much more closely. So oversight on the above mentioned areas that I've noted that are most vulnerable is quite important. Take you to the next slide. Okay, in terms of child protection, while I know last year there was a focus on violence and child protection is key in terms of survival and development of a child. So the key priorities listed by the President were the reduction in serious violent crimes, ensuring that the justice system works efficiently. Implementation plans are going to be rolled out in the next 3 years to increase the police force by 10%, and then finally participation in community safety forums. So the for the committees are to ensure that they are well resource detected and forensic laboratory services. So over and above police services, the follow-up thereof in terms of crime, so if in cases where children are, for example, shot, so that there are services in place or much more well-resourced services in place to follow up on cases of violence. Then in terms of of training, there's a need to have well-equipped personnel with that's well-equipped in terms of knowing the criminal justice system, and these services and service providers should be abreast of legislative developments. And then finally, while 10% seems to be a big number, it is surely not enough to deal with the social implications of what we're dealing with. If I could just mention a few. In terms of children and violence, when a child is, again, because I've done research on firearms, when a child is shot, it is not just the fact that this child needs trauma, medical trauma help. He or she also needs trauma counseling, and these services need to be rolled out much more effectively. So over and above medical treatment, we need to equip police men and women with skills to counsel or at least refer children to services that they would need after being victims of crime or violence. So we need police to be adequately trained in basic counseling and referral methodologies and in order to assist with psychosocial issues which are bound to arise when dealing with youth and children. And then what was interesting from the speech, while there are measures in place, these are usually reactive measures. So increasing a police force is just reactive to the issues of crime. What we need is reactive intervention measures. So, for example, programs at school that campaign for crime-free societies or gun-free societies. Also, what I thought was an interesting connection which we could make using, again, schools as nodes of intervention is possibly looking at child protection units or the reinstatement thereof. While we do have within certain provinces child protection units, it's not a national program that's been rolled out. And these are very key because these could, these are trained professionals that are able to deal with children and the issues that they face. So that is something to consider. And then something that I should also mention, which is in the paper in terms of child health, is also what Kashba mentioned in terms of brain drain. Children specifically have special needs in terms of the health services they receive. So while our doctors are leaving, our children are left more vulnerable because we do need pediatric surgeons and we do need specialized orthopedic surgeons and doctors that are specifically specified for, like for example, in cases where children are found in circumstances of violence, we need doctors and therapists and psychiatrists to be able to assist us with that. And again, I have to reiterate, a lot of the priorities have been unpacked in the paper, so I just briefly touched on some of the issues that I thought was most important. So I'll hand over to Gary to deal with disabilities. Thank you.
Good morning, members. I would like to start off by saying that when looking at the State of the Nation, or the 2010 State of the Nation, yes, it was a little more difficult than with the other issues, because in the State of the Nation address, the President mentioned persons with disabilities once. So there's a need to look deeper into critical issues or the issues that affect persons with disabilities, because first and foremost, there is no data relating to persons with disabilities. So it's very difficult to analyze the two situations. So in terms of the committee program for the year, I looked at specifically the link between the access to basic services and the access to health services in terms of persons with disabilities. And the State of the Nation address is critical because it provides a barometer in terms of services provision for both basic services, which is which would be housing, and then education, water and sanitation, and transport as well, which is critical to persons with disabilities, and then the link as well to access to healthcare services. So in terms of the 2010 that's the national address, the President highlighted a critical need for increased social spending given the state of the economy, and then also what has been happening in terms of the global financial crisis. So there was an emphasis on increased social spending, but the one key issue that was mentioned here was the child support grant. And that is commendable in terms of the extension from children between the ages of 15 and 18, but what in terms of persons with disabilities, what about the care dependency grant? That has not been extended. And I'll explain later that there is a critical area in terms of persons with disabilities that are and children that are not covered. But I will list those later on as we go along. And then another key issue that was mentioned also in terms of the needs of persons with disabilities was the expansion of the road network. However, if one looks again at the priority set for the year and last year as well, the improvement or the extension of the road network relates specifically only to the criteria and the needs of the Soccer World Cup. So the question is, what about persons with disabilities? How do we increase access to basic services, and then in relation as well to access to healthcare services? Because especially for persons with disabilities in rural areas, how do they access those health services? And how do they access the basic services as well? Because these services do not come to them. If they need to go and apply for a grant or apply for an ID document or apply for a water meter, how do they access those services? So transport is critical for persons with disabilities. Then another key issue that I also highlighted was the implications of the introduction of a performance monitoring system across government, and how the ministers are then required to sign a performance agreement with the president. In terms of service delivery, which is critical amongst all the government departments, what are the implications then for persons with disabilities? If the minister and then the DG in that department is required to sign that document that says, I will deliver so many houses in such a period of time, what then does that mean for persons with disabilities in terms of adequate housing for them, given that there might be mobility impairments? Next would then be another priority, which I also highlighted, was the upgrading of the public healthcare system. I will go into this in detail later, but what does this entail for persons with disabilities, given that there's improvement of the hospitals? And the improvement of hospitals should not just surround having a ramp at that specific facility, because what if the person dies as impairments in terms of not being able to see or being able to hear? And I'll discuss later also some of the actually attitudinal barriers that exist in terms of persons with disabilities with access to healthcare. Then finally, in terms of basic services, the President mentioned a turnaround strategy for municipalities, and we all know that municipalities and local government in general is critical in terms of delivering basic services to the population. What does, the question is here, how does that relate to specifically to persons with disabilities in terms of accessing those basic services and accessing healthcare services, given that in terms of healthcare services there is the notion to sort of get those services down to a down to the district level. So what opportunities do exist for persons with disabilities in terms of accessing those services? Now, this is where we'll go into more detail then with the issue that I've highlighted. Once again, I started off with the care dependency grant. What is critical here is that there's an extension of the child support grant for children between the ages of 15 and 18. But it's critical and it's very important to note that with the care dependency grant, it does not cover children with disabilities that relate to deafness, blindness, albinism, epilepsy, autism, and progressively disabling life-threatening inherited diseases. That is unacceptable. A child who is deaf has just as the same needs as a child who is in a wheelchair. So there is a critical need, and this is a focus area for, I believe it should be a focus area for the committee as well, where there is a need to look at the extension of the care dependency grant beyond what has been set now. That is critical. In terms of then, I also mentioned the expansion of the road network, but in terms of basic services, that would then be transport, housing, water, and sanitation. Mention has been made of expansion of the road network, but as I've mentioned before, this relates specifically to the 2010 World Cup. How do we then expand those services and expand the road network to meet the needs of persons with disabilities, bus networks with the ramps, that can take a person who needs to be in a wheelchair from point A to point B to ensure that he or she can go to hospital and access those services and go and apply for a grant and go to apply for a meter in their home. Then also the explanation address also then mentioned the performance monitoring system. We need to know how this increases the access of persons with disabilities to those services, particularly basic and healthcare services, and how the minister will then ensure that what is expected of him or her in his or her performance agreement translates into meeting the needs of persons with disabilities. So just to highlight again, there is a very tenuous link between seeing something in the State of the Nation address and translating that into actual service delivery for persons with disabilities. In terms of the healthcare system again, let's go back to the basic services. There's a specific cluster that has been designed by the President or has been formed by CAM, which is known as the Infrastructure Development Cluster. And basically, the infrastructural development cluster is responsible for not only for transport, but for all other basic services as well: electricity, water, sanitation, and housing. I then looked at the progress report for that specific cluster of government, and the President specifically mentioned that in the 2010 State of the Nation address, that there will be an increased focus on housing, on sanitation, on water. The problem is, if you look at the progress report for that specific government cluster, all the services that have been delivered, and I list them in the more expanded document that has been handed out: funding mechanisms for the continuation of infrastructure development, guidelines for infrastructure planning, rolling out of ICT infrastructure, power generation, infrastructure for transportation of goods and services, fuel transportation, energy efficiency, upgrading of water infrastructure, rural infrastructure development, and FIFA World Cup readiness. One of the critical areas here is how does that relate to the aims of the formation of the infrastructure development cluster. it relates specifically to World Cup readiness. If we look at ICT development, that's good and well. What does that do for the improvement? It's on page 5 of the expanded document. How does that relate to services for persons with disabilities? Because it looks as if that specific cluster has been doing everything to get the country ready for the World Cup and not speaking to what it's actually been formed for. Then in terms of healthcare provision, here is another thing, it's another critical area that I've highlighted for in terms of impact on persons with disabilities. The notion of the improvement of the healthcare system relates specifically to the widening or to stem the tide of the widening inequalities in terms of healthcare provision, the boosting of human resource capacity, revitalizing hospitals and clinics, and then the setting of certain goals, or government setting certain goals and to address these concerns. But if one looks at the primary healthcare package set out by the Department of Health, which was, under correction, which relates to the year 2000, they, in terms of service delivery for persons with disabilities, you will see a listed again on the bottom of page 6 of a more expanded document that it relates to just...
I don't seem to have that expanded document. Am I the only one? Or have others got the disability one?
It's on page number 6 in terms of healthcare services. The bottom, it's like it's the bullet point. May I proceed? Okay. So in terms of the primary healthcare package for South Africa, the issues of service delivery for persons with disabilities, the policy outlines a list of how it intends to meet the needs of persons with disabilities. And that is commendable. However, in terms of, there are certain sections that are lacking of that specific policy for the Department of Health. It's close to 10 years since the inception of that specific policy, and there are still problems in terms of access to those healthcare facilities. Especially children and those who have mobility impairments. Another issue also in terms of the primary healthcare package is that it does not speak to the need it doesn't speak to the effective need to access assistive devices, and that is a critical area in terms of oversight for the committee. Also, what I saw as most concerning in terms of access to healthcare services, in terms of persons with disabilities, is that persons with disabilities experienced negative attitudes when it came to healthcare workers. So they were actually turned away and told, this is not important, you can come back at a later stage. That is unacceptable. And that happens particularly in rural areas. Then also one of the major developments since 2009, second to 2010, is the starting or the development of the National Health Insurance Plan. In 2009, it said that it would be established and there'd be further progression made. It seems as if in 2010 there is this halt or there is a slowness in terms of there tends to be a sort of break in terms of what was promised in 2009 and in 2010 again. And it's critical that the committee looks at how the promises made in 2009 and then again 2010, how that impacts on proper and effective access to basic services and services in terms of healthcare for persons with disabilities. So finally, I've just listed then three or four critical questions that the committee could look at. One, again, the extension of the care dependency grant to persons with disabilities and the extension to epilepsy, blindness, deafness, and autism, as well as albinism. Then secondly, in terms of the shift in basic services, which is in terms of from national government and then to improve the services in terms of extending that now, giving municipalities more power, what does that mean for accessing basic services for persons with disabilities? Thirdly, what in terms of the improvement of the healthcare system, what does that mean for the services as they pertain to persons with disabilities? And finally, how will persons with disabilities be covered in the National Health Insurance Plan? It is critical that in all of these questions, how have persons with disabilities been part of the consultative process? Because it is unacceptable, and I don't understand how policies can be developed that speak to the very vulnerable in society, and that they have not been included in that process. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think we'll use the both documents, you know, together in discussing this. On the first document, where you listed the strategic priorities for 2010, I'm sure you left out fighting corruption there. Can we add that in? Because without doing that, we won't be able to achieve the top part, creating decent work, fighting crime, and so forth. Can I open for members to discuss? Honorable Kekane?
The last speaker. That's where I wonder why the presentation is informative, but why do you start it by saying there's no data on disability? Because there's so much data, and at least the type of data that can inform us, that can help us form an opinion. I mean, for example, the United Nations long ago told our democratic government that they deter South Africa is having the worst condition of poverty for the disabled people. In other words, disabled people in South Africa are declared the most suffering from poverty. And analysis went further and say even in government, the quota was 2% for employment. You see, you didn't talk much about employment. You talk about grants, REMS, which is an enabling environment. But the biggest thing is disabled people don't feel they must live on charity. They feel if you create the right environment, they are able to contribute to the economy just like any other person. Whether you're talking visual, hearing, physical, mental, or emotional disability, by the way, Chair, even emotions, if you get very angry with me, you might be declared disabled because there's emotional disability. So, but I was just saying that, you should emphasize this is the attitude. Disabled people don't feel they must be spoon-fed, you know. They feel create the right environment, will work just like any other person, and just like normal people, if you so like, need pens, papers to write, disabled people also, if you give us our type of pens and papers, we can just write and contribute. In fact, you'll be surprised at tertiary institutions, some of these disabled people perform better academically than what you'd call normal people. So the issue is environment. I would have liked to hear you say about your education at school. How many are there? How many finishes? Secondly, the most important, income. I mean, it is set in government where quota is 2%. Even in nationally in government, that has dropped. These statistics were there in the previous president's office because disability desk was there. They have a commission there. That even in government, in private sector, is worse. The quota is 2, but nobody's meeting that quota in 2%. Okay, but just to be short, I'm just saying that there's information, that a lot of it, and if you research properly, you'll get it. The last thing, Chair, is on the youth, back to the issue of the youth. You know, the youth are a pillar stone of our programs. We say we want to beneficiate, we want to manufacture, we don't want to send raw material, we want to create jobs here. Because when we send things outside, buy them back, we're creating jobs for those countries that we're sending our things to. So we'd like to, but we can't do that until we've got our children with skills, this youth, being engineers, like it is a chartered accountant. Because who's going to open those factories that must manufacture? You need people who can design, and that is the engineering skills. That is why colonization denied that and said blacks are not allowed to be engineers by law. Now, this is the paradigm that we want to change. Now, I'm just asking this because what are our programs actually to restore that? Because we talk about it, but exactly how are we doing that? Because if we fail there, all our programs are going to fail, even long-term programs. Thanks.
I think let's just discuss both, everything. Yeah. Both documents, all sectors at once. That will work out for us. Honorable Marcus, and in the meantime, can you take note of the data issue so that you can explain what you actually meant? And Honorable Dorothy, after Marcus.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and I'd like to thank our researchers for the work done, but I felt when it came to children, it was a bit vague. I'm looking at page 3 when it comes to our NDG on maternal mortality rates. I think what will be important there is for our researchers, it's on page 3. If the researcher will speak to up-to-date information, you know, what's happening in 2009, what is happening in 2008, because we are not reaching our goals when it comes to this MGE, you know, lower maternal mortality rate, because there they got very little progress, because if that came from a department, we'll ask them to give us up-to-date data. And then the other thing is this cervical cancer. The researcher mentioned the postnatal depression, but cervical cancer is also rife within South Africa. And I spoke to the Minister of Health about it, and they said they have money set aside for it. But at the moment, you know, not enough pressure is coming from the ground when it comes to cervical cancer. Because I know within Africa, 40% of our women die when it comes to cervical cancer. When it comes to South Africa, it is 50%. Then my next question is on when it comes to the toilets, the bucket system. I'd like to know from the researcher, is this only for areas where housing development or human settlement is envisaged? Because when it comes to the informal settlement, I'm aware that, you know, there they won't change the bucket system to, you know, our water system. So I'd like to know something on that information. Is it for the settlements that we are going to have where people are situated? Then when it comes to disability and the care dependency grant, I'd like our researcher...
Sorry, Martha. When we interact with this information, we must bear in mind that this is not a department.
I know.
I'm just saying. These are researchers that we have
know, but I'm just asking certain things because a person should know when it comes to research where it comes from. Then when it comes to our CDG, according to social development, and I think we should go into it. At the moment, they are in the process with health defining disability. Because many people are left out of the system when it comes to high blood pressure and diabetes. Yes. So I think, you know, we should interact to see what is included when it comes to our children so that we can give input into that document because they are busy with it at the moment. So I think we can get it just to see what is happening because this was discussed already in the Social Development Committee, but they didn't bring the whole package yet. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and let me also thank the researchers for actually arming us because I think this information will enable us to engage with the department. So I really want to thank you. But then I also want to say I think Comrade Dennis should also not make us angry. He must not only look from his side of being made angry, so he must also not make us angry. That was on a lighter note. I think on a serious note, Comrade Chair, I want to speak to the under women's health. In terms of, revitalization of hospitals and where hospitals were reduced. I think I want to agree that, you know, I think the department needs to give us information as to where these hospitals were reduced. But I'm also interested to know in terms of the nurses' home, which one heard that they were going to be brought back, because I think that's one area where it actually disadvantaged, you know, the services in the hospitals. And then when it comes to I also want to agree that one of the important areas is that of disaggregation, you know, of data, because yes, departments when they come they just give us, you know, general, you know, data without being specific, especially to women. And then when it under youth where you talk about especially basic education, I think it's also important for us, as we say, that you know the youth must be in school and you know at the right time and teachers teaching. But I think women also have a responsibility to educate the, you know, I always have a problem when it comes to this because sometimes we seem to leave the responsibility to teachers and learners only. Children arriving late at schools, we know that sometimes it's lack of transport, but even parents, I think they should give responsibility. If you look at even, you know, parents meeting, when there are parents meeting, they don't attend parents. And it also, I think, it adds to the problem. No, even those who are at home, they don't attend. I think they need to be educated, Comrade Chair. They are not used to. You know, from the old system, they never participated in their children's education. And I think it still remains for them to be educated and to show them how important it is for them to participate in their children's education. And then I think the MDG, I think Manfred has partly covered me on that because I think we still have a lot to do in that area as to the data that pertains to the progress by the by the MDG. I think that is
Yeah, I'll stop the chair. Thanks.
Honorable Mabe, Honorable Kikane. Okane first. Are you covered? Honorable member.
Thank you, Chair, and also thanks to the Research Department for all the work that they've done. Chair, just one thing I'd like to know is on page 10 of the document, it states that to reconsider the reinstatement of CPUs, Child Protection Units. I'm sure if I recall correctly, this has it's been stated that they will be reinstituted, but the only trouble is I don't know how far they've got. We're doing that. I wonder whether we can find out how far, you know, that they've started these CPUs. But I think the decision has been taken by either by SAPS or this one. The document there on page 10, it says to consider implications, to consider reinstatement child protection unit under implications. I think they were done away with, Chair, the CPUs were done away with. And there's now been a call for them to be reinstituted. But I just don't know how far they've got. If you could just find out on that, please. Thanks, Jim.
Believe that getting tenders is empowerment. And it's not empowerment. It's not empowerment. I don't know how we need to make them understand this, because I can get a 10 million tender, perhaps of building a school, of building a road. I simply take that and outsource it to someone who can do that. You understand? So is that empowerment? That person who got the tender has not been empowered. Why not actually give the building contractor that tender? You understand? We need to get this straight. Now, our youth get confused. They really think they are being empowered. They are not being empowered. In fact, they are being disempowered, if you look at it seriously. You understand? Because then they get this money, they think they know it all and they have it all. Once the money is finished, they are not empowered. They are left with no skills whatsoever. Whereas if this tender was given to this person who can build, who's a contractor, pull along some other youth and empower that youth. That is how it's supposed to be done. But the way we see it, somebody who knows nothing about building a road gets given a tender. It's wrong. It's not correct. It's not the right way. It's not how it should be done. But we can open it for debate.
I was just agreeing with you to say maybe it could be a condition for a contractor for him to get a tender. He must transfer skills to those who don't have skills and training.
I'm saying this. These tenders end up in the wrong hands if we do it this way. They end up in the wrong hands. We should find a way of doing it. But anyway, I don't want to be carried away, but it's a very emotional issue for me. Honorable.
Madam Chair. Okay. Thank you very much. The issues of procurement.
Oh, I'm sorry. Can we give you a chance and then Mother?
Thank you, Chair. I thank the report. I mean, the successors earlier on. I found that there's a gap in this discussion because I'm sorry I'll be like Mr. Kekana because my interest mostly is on women. Mm-hmm. And looking at the document and the women to become economically viable, mm-hmm. it's not there. And, I am very concerned about it, and I want us also to look at the budget vote because I think there was a lot that was said on issues of economic development or whatever for women. Not for women, actually that was tabled during the budget presentation. But I think that is the gap because I think as this ministry, if we, one of our areas is not to ensure that women are empowered economically, then I don't think we're going to bring any change in the community. Thanks. Okay,
I was really just wanting to expand on something that you had said. You said it's not empowerment getting a tender. I wanted to say it is enrichment. And I think this is what we need to look at very carefully. And I know we can't solve all the problems, but this is why I think women are so important as mothers, as the center of families, that we as women need to help other women to establish the right values in society, where people are not just looking at the trappings of wearing fancy things or having fancy cars, but looking at what you're doing for yourself as a person. And I feel very strongly, and this is something I've mentioned in previous committees as well, that we need to do something about young mothers. That young mothers need to be taught. When they go to the clinic, they get their little bits of advice about injections or inoculations and things like that. But I have felt that we need to help with parenting skills, so that we can bring up a generation of people who are going to be bringing up young people who put the focus on the right things. I know it's not going to happen overnight, but I don't think we should lose focus, because otherwise we're always just patching up on the outside. But if your core values are missing in society, doesn't matter where you come from, whatever, there's certain core values. And that's how we have to try and find some way of encouraging young people to bring up their children in a better way. And this comes in with disability and with violence as well. I think so often women are actually the authors of ongoing violence because they treat their sons differently. Little boys don't have to do domestic chores. They don't have to do this, that, or the next thing. It's the way we bring up our young people that is going to determine the way of the future. So, just a comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. It's unfortunate, I don't know, experts will tell you about globalization, but it has got positive and negative impact on society. So with regard to fancy lifestyles and clothes and expensive cars. We can't run away from it, you know. It's one of the disadvantages of globalization. So we have to live with it. Madam Chair, I think also the issue of tenders, I think the procurement issue is a very sensitive issue. And maybe we should not bring it into this committee. I don't know if you are qualified to talk about that, but maybe we are. Okay, it's fine. But as to who do we allocate tenders to, how and why, I think Honorable Pekana will agree with me. It's a very sensitive issue. I think the youth also have got the right to benefit in those tenders. Madam Chair, really, I would be failing the youth of South Africa if I would not strongly say, if Honorable Kekana is allowing me to say it, you know, because I didn't want to get deeper into in terms of responding, but I just wanted to say that it's a very sensitive issue, and I personally feel that maybe we're not qualified to talk about it now. Maybe it can be an agenda item for later discussions, but maybe not now. So that when we engage on it, we should have the correct context on it, you know. But it's fine. But I personally feel that the youth has got the right to benefit in the wealth of this country. Madam Chair, let me also take this opportunity in joining those who welcomed the report presented by researchers. The advantage of our committee is that it cuts across all departments. That's what makes this committee very powerful. And I also want to say that I think this exercise, it has set the tone of our agenda. I want to also say that there will be a need for us to go back and consult our manifestos and check if the SONA is really emphasizing on what the our party manifestos are saying through you, the Chief Whip. Maybe the study group also, we need to meet as a study group and prioritize issues that were raised. I think this exercise is also getting us to engage better with the departments. Madam Chair, you also reflected on something in terms of the previous SONAS as to whether we have achieved anything. I think there will also be a need for us to reflect on the achievements and challenges with regard to the previous SONAS as to what is it that we have achieved and what has been said for this current year, whether it is going to be possible or not. Do we have resources? The issue of budget, Honorable Kiki, comes back again. I think it will be important that you also engage with the budget. Lastly, Madam Chair, I think in addition to what I've just said, maybe with regard to the questions that members have raised, I also don't think the researchers will be in a position to respond to those questions, because if you listen to most of the questions, they would need the department to be here to directly respond on them. So I'm going to propose that through the study group, we sit down and prioritize, you know, departments that we strongly feel that they must come before this committee, before the end of this session. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, thanks. Now let us correct this issue. I am not saying that the youth should not be disadvantaged. All I'm saying, tenders are not empowerment. That's what I'm saying. For me, it's not empowerment. I don't know what I would call it, but it's not empowerment. If that particular youth, for instance, is skilled in, and I think we qualify to talk about these things as a committee. If that particular young lady or young man is skilled in tiling, just simple tiling of the floor, I have no problem in that person getting that tender. Because that is empowerment. It's doing exactly what, you know. But what I'm saying, just taking simple me and giving me a tender of building a school, I'm making an example. I'm not being empowered because I can't build a school. I'm going to take all this work and give it to the relevant person. So what I'm saying, why not give that work to that particular person, and that person in return gets other youth and empower them. That's what I'm saying. I'm not against youth being empowered. I can't be against youth being empowered. Honorable Kekana, Honorable Kiki. Add on that, if we would remember, or if we would go back to the State of the Nation's address, when we briefly listened to Honorable, the previous Minister of Science and Technology, Mangena, Honorable Mangena, he actually spoke something with regard to this, that something like a child would say, "No, Mama, I will not go to school because I'm going to tender." He spoke something like that, if you can remember, out of his speech. And that was correct. Because our kids now think that tenders are empowerment. So we need to move them away from them. Otherwise, they will not go to school because they think they are going to tender. You see? That's why I'm saying this in that context. Then Honorable Kiki.
No, Chair, with due respect, the responses are not satisfactory. I think a whole attitude or paradigm shift should take place. I mean, you can't say there's globalization, it has positive, it has negative. Unfortunately, there's nothing we can do. We are part of that globalization, and we are not on the receiving end of bad things. We can't allow, whether it comes from first world countries through Hollywood, the movie industry, the TV, things that we see. You know the soapies. Three things I emphasize: riches, rich people. Number two, low morals, father falling in love with daughter-in-law, crime, killing. And if you are in a mukuku in a shack and you see all these rich guys doing this, who am I not to follow suit? We can't. You can't say it's globalization. Therefore, let us follow suit. There's nothing. We are part of that globalization. No matter how minute our contribution is, but what is bad must be rejected, and what is good must be embraced. And we can't just sit and open our mouth and say, globalization is too big, we receive, we wonder. No, we challenge what is wrong. That leads to the second point, tender, we're not qualified. Me, personally, I'm qualified to say anything about anything in this country because I'm a citizen of this country. Whether it is in this committee, it's worth in this committee because youth issues are part of us. And whatever goes wrong with youth, we should be concerned. So if tendering, some people look at it as part of the solution, we need to critique. I mean, it is true. There is this shortcut attitude from our youth. You know, they want to get rich overnight. The school thing is a waste of time. You'll take another 20 years before you can be a qualified engineer, and you must sacrifice better when they go out and have fun and drink, and have, you've got to sit at home and burn the midnight oil. So this shortcut thing, we should say, look, in those desperate conditions where really one couldn't, you can look at business opportunities. And if a youth is good as a business person and he can employ engineers to run a tender, fine. But it isn't a general solution. Our youth must go to school. We need skills. I mean, the alternative of that is crime, the alternative of that is prostitution, because of prostitution, I won't go to school, there's an easy way of making money. So I'm just saying the general attitude, we can't give up and say that globalization, we're not qualified to talk. This is our life. Who's going to talk about our life and future if not us? Thanks, Chair.
Are you fine now? Oh, Kiki. Is it because you are a COP member I'm doing this?
That your COP member was involved in coming up with the RDP document. The RDP document, I think we have to go back. We have to go back to the basics, I'm telling you, if we don't want to cripple this country. Because RDP document was clear that if you have an experience, take someone that does not have experience, partner with that person, tender, and then you take people that are coming from that community and you train them, and after you left that particular community, you leave those people with that particular skill so that they are able to tender and get their tender in future. If we did that from the very onset, we should not have been in this problem today. And we cannot run away. Yabona, the issue of the roads is a typical example in South Africa, whereby you go and you find all the roads are not finished and those roads are not even properly made. The only roads that are perfect in South Africa are those that were part of the nodal points. Those that people had to come outside South Africa and come and do those roads. If you look at those national roads, they are perfect, they are right. Go to our township and look at the roads that has been recently made. And we must keep quiet. We are citizens in this country, and we'll continue to talk because we are citizens. We cannot let South Africa be like other African countries, because it's exactly what is happening in Africa. But if we must keep quiet, then we'll keep quiet. But at the end of the day, our children will not have future in this country. Thanks.
I don't think anybody said we should keep quiet. I think the Honorable Mother, that's the way she was seeing it, and I think she also had the right to raise it the way she sees it, but nobody said we should keep quiet. That's why we're talking. We are all talking, because everybody has the right to talk. I think we are talking in order to try and build. It should be towards nation building. Our talking should be towards nation building, and of course debates like these will come. We debate them. The better debater will win at the end. There's nothing wrong with that. Absolutely nothing wrong. Honorable Mabe, please don't now also.
No. I'm not debating, Madam Chair. I just want to bring a proposal, if you'll agree, that maybe as a matter of agency, we invite any department that will assist us in terms of youth development. I'm saying youth because, remember, before we started with this meeting, the issue of youth was raised as to whether do we have youth, whether is it with us or not. But then the way the debates are continuing, it shows that there's a dire need for this committee to actually finally engage on youth matters. And any department that will assist us on youth development, on youth skills development, and I think on moral regeneration as well, you know, people who come and talk to us about those things, they must tell us what is it that they have done. Then I will definitely engage on that day. Thanks.
I wonder whether we would not be able, when doing what Honorable Mother is saying, can't we also come up with views and proposals to the NYDA to say, as a committee, this is how we think you could empower youth. I'm sure we can do that as a committee. Country. I'm sure we can. I think that would be a very good move. Because at the end, they will also come up with programs that we feel are not valid for the youth if we don't, you know, assist in guiding them. Those are our kids. We need to guide them. And also, I think I fully support what Honorable Mabi, maybe you can jot that down so we could see when we would invite. I don't know, maybe that is another reason that our budget is so little for this department. Is it because are we not going to implement any program? It's just merely to monitor and all. But even if, I mean, take us as a committee, if really we would engage on a tough monitoring exercise, I don't think the budget that we have for a committee will be enough. I don't think it will be enough. So that is another thing that I never understand. How is it that committees are allocated the same amount? Those are things that perhaps if we get time and the right platform to talk about. Honorable Robinson.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to say that I agree with the Honorable Mabe that we do need to get more departments here to come and inform us about things.
Yes, just a bit.
Sorry? Oh, yeah, all right. The Child Justice Act, that's something that's very important. Have we had anybody to brief us on that?
No.
I don't think so. Now, that is something that I think is important for us as well, to see the shortcomings, to see what is happening, and how this can assist us as well. Because the Child Justice Act also closely links up with the domestic violence. Now, this brings me to another point, and if you excuse me just bringing it in. I just received an SMS from a colleague saying, has your committee not been invited to the justice presentation now on our Child Justice Act, Committee Room 2? So I SMS'd to say, no, we're in another meeting. Now, I just wanted to ask about changing around of the day on which we meet. Originally, we were meeting on a Wednesday. And now, I understand we're meeting on a Tuesday if we don't have a plenary, but on a Wednesday if we do have a plenary. I personally find this problematic because I plan far ahead, and generally I plan that on a Tuesday I can do other things, or I can possibly attend the Social Development Portfolio Committees as well. And I think this is good if we don't clash, because we can learn from one another. But I just want to appeal, and I hope the others will support me, that we don't chop and change, because if I want to make appointments with other people in my constituency, I want to know which day I'm fully committed so that I can be here, instead of being in a situation where I've got to be late or I've got to say, sorry, I can't be there, and not participate fully. Thank you. I'd like to hear the views of the others and the chair on that. Thank you.
I'm sure the committee section will respond to that. Can you quickly respond?
Thank you, Member. Thank you, Chair. I have a document with me right now that was sent through to us informing us about the grouping of all the committees and the days that we are supposed to meet. I know Honorable Robinson raised that with me one day, and we were informed, instruction actually, that when there is no plenary, the committee, all the committees are in Group A or Group B, which our committee is in Group B, we are supposed to meet on Tuesday in the morning or alternatively Wednesday in the afternoon from 2 until late. So that's the reason why, like for instance this week there's no plenary, then the committee can meet on Tuesday in the morning. I've circulated that document that's with me right now so that members can know the future.
Honorable Pell, Honorable Dorothy, and do you want to talk on this? Not now. Then you'll talk after Honorable Dorothy and Honorable Kiki.
No,
thank you, Chair. I think there's going to be a problem. Right away now we don't have other members because they're attending committee thing like sports. Sports is sitting as we speak now. So that means we're going to lose members. I think we must consider the Wednesday like what we used to do, because Home Affairs also sits today, and I'm the member of that committee. I didn't go to that committee. Thank you, Gom.
Okay.
It's two of us actually with Kiki. Is it 2 o'clock today? Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I think I want to concur with Member Pell because I don't think we should depend on the plenary. I think we should have a definite day of meeting. And if we are to meet on Wednesday, let us meet on Wednesday. If I mean the majority of members feel so, but let us not be our meeting be determined by the plenary. We must just have a specific date.
Thank you, Chairperson, Honourable Members. We have to take into consideration this is a joint meeting of the SC and the PC. And now, in the NCOP, the committee with Mrs. Mabe share membership with Honourable Kikani. I'm currently the secretary for both committees. We share members where more than 50% of Mrs. Mabe's members are Mrs. Kikani's members. So what they've done is, between the two committees, the agreement was that Land and Environmental Affairs will have meetings on a Tuesday. Women, youth, and people with disabilities will have meetings on a Wednesday because the parliamentary program for the NA and the NCOP are different as well. So the only reason we had the meeting today was because we were supposed to be on oversight and that did not materialize. So Land and Environmental Affairs did not have a meeting this week, which left our slot open to Mrs. Mabe. So this was more or less a once-off. But the time slots have been set between the two NCOP committees, Land and Environmental on a Tuesday and Mrs. Mabe's Youth and Children, People with Disabilities on a Wednesday. So if that arrangement would in fact affect the PC should they want a joint meeting as well, because Mrs. Mabe's committee will not always be available on a Tuesday because the dates for the two committees have been set. Thank you.
I think it makes sense what you say, and also taking into account that we don't always have joint sittings, I think and on the issue of the Justice Act, remember we said we know we have a few acts that need to be amended and looked into, but we cannot do all of them. We cannot do all of them, but maybe we'll see.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just on the Child Justice Act, it comes into effect on the 1st of April. Justice has been late in putting forward the regulations. It literally came in, I think, last week, and the researcher for that committee informed Joy that, do we know of it? So I was asked to sit in on that, but the reality is, given our times now, there's 4 weeks left until the regulations have to be up, done, and put out. So what I can do for the committee is look at maybe getting the minutes of the meeting, see what the key issues are around the regulations. When I was part of the JMC, we put in a submission on the Child Justice Act to look at holistically the issues around children. So I just think, given the time frame, and as Chairperson said, between us considering budget, the department coming next week and the NYDA, it's a bit tight. But I'll circulate the information that I receive.
Thank you, Chair. Also, in terms of other meetings that might be happening this week, in terms of the budget, I know some of the members are very interested in the budget for specifically the department. And it's interesting to note the Commission for Gender Equality is now under the Department for Women, Children and Persons with Disabilities. And there has been major problems specifically around the annual report of the CGE. And since, I think for the past 2 years, there's been no annual report received from that specific institution. And they are appearing tomorrow before SCOPA. And I think it's critical that we see exactly, if that members attend specifically of the committee, to see exactly what is happening, because I had a read through and I'm busy, Kofi and I are busy doing an analysis of the budget for the department. And the budget mentions targets and achievements that we can't account for. there's no way to know because there's been no annual report, and how can Treasury mention so many things have been done and there's no targets been set and we haven't seen any, and the committee or parliament hasn't seen any of that. So it's critically important that there is a meeting tomorrow with SCOPA and the CD and the Department of Justice will be attending and presenting as well.
I wonder if we could avail ourselves and attend that meeting. The meeting of the CGE, they are appearing before with SCOPA tomorrow. What time is it?
I stand under correction. I think it is at 10. Let me just check right by. It's V454, but I'll ask Nelly to send out the notification to all the members.
Please don't find the time and the venue for us. In fact, it would have been good if they had appeared before us, before going to SCOPA. But then, nevertheless, we'll still try and attend. But I'm sure those questions that SCOPA has for them, we also have the same. And I think quite a percentage of the budget have been given to the CGE. A better budget than the department have been actually given to them when they did not account for 2 years.
Let us perhaps get a report from Gary on that as well. If we could just get the information of what arises at that meeting in case we can't get there ourselves. I think it's so important for us to be able to have this wide insight. It's impossible to be everywhere. So I think if we've got a fixed time for our meeting, and if you and the WIP could take that up with the programming committee, I think we know that we can plan ahead and we can see where else we can fit ourselves in. And even if they don't come to us, we can go to them and listen in on other meetings and also plan our other parliamentary duties that we have, that we know where we are, that it's not chopping and changing all the time.
Member, please, let's try and make an effort to attend tomorrow's meeting. I think it will assist us. I know we haven't done all the issues, but I think the researchers have assisted us a great deal. We will still go through some of the issues here. I have a few questions, but then I cannot
I think one of the departments that we need to invite as soon as possible is the Department of Health, so that we understand how far are they with this new National Health Insurance Scheme. So that I think it's very important that we work together on this with the Portfolio Committee of Health in Parliament, so that when they have their public hearings, we are part and parcel of that, to ensure that women are participating right through, not only when it is implemented. So I would like to suggest that it's one of the departments that we should call in as soon as possible, so that after that we meet with the Portfolio Committee.
Why don't we raise those departments that we think should come before us? Let's just raise them, so that we'll know them. One is health. Which other one? Justice. Which committee is that? You pick them up. You pick them up for us. Okay, you pick them up for us. Also, I wanted to raise. Yeah, we can take a whole day into this. I wanted to raise something. On the issue of where, on the State of the Nation address, for instance, it's always good to talk. You see, like when Jenny raises the issue of people living with disabilities,
it's very hard to object to what you say, because it's actually from the horse's mouth. You know, on the issue of on the measures that are taken to reduce the threat to HIV and AIDS, on the sonar, it is said that the ARVs will be given to pregnant women regardless of CD4 count. Is that what you're saying? We have to monitor this very closely because it does not happen. It does not happen. I have a relative who's HIV positive. Just recently she was terribly sick with terrible rash on the face, but she could not go to hospital because we have. I said, why don't you go and see the doctor who's assisting you? She said, I cannot go until my date is due. So those are the things that we should do away with. You can't have someone almost dying because they're waiting for the date that is due. You see, things like that. But we will not know about these things until they are closer to us or we are closer to them. You see? We need to check about this. I don't think it's right. It's not right the way we are doing it presently. That we have to wait for your date, even if, you know, there's no sense of emergency. You can't even go to the clinic because we have to wait for your date. We can't have that. Can we then close on this part of the discussion so that we can move? We will excuse the NCOP. We will invite you again when the need arises. Thank you for coming. Thank you very much. Do we have the minutes? Do we all have them? Is it quite a lot of them? Is it quite a lot of them? 1, 2, 3, 4. It's just 4 minutes. Oh, I even lost your one. Did we go through those minutes? Long time ago. Yeah, we went through them. Are we stopped? Should just about that. All of them. Oh, not the last one. Are we all in agreement with what has been said yet? Does this, Honorable Wick, does this include the 2nd of February 1 too? This one. So that was the reason for not adopting them. All of them. Then. Marcus, what did you say? Why are you talking about that now? We're talking about minutes. Huh?
Yeah, the document that was given now, it's what I'll talk about. That it's the document that I said is going to be circulated to members for information.
Okay. And then can we have somebody to adopt the minutes? Because we all agree that we have seen them, we have gone through them. They are true reflections of our meeting. It's 4 sets of meeting, the 14th of October last year, 21st of October last year, 18th of November last year, and the 2nd of February 2010.
Are we all in agreement?
Yes.
Should we have a hand? Honorable Pearl Peterson, a seconder? The seconder, the fourth of minutes. 60 seconds. You mustn't look so unsure. Vivian, consideration and adoption of committee annual report. Which one is that one now? This one, eh? If we go to the other chance. We are starting on the first time. Do we have copies of that report? This is the annual report. I think this is the report of the work that this committee has done, eh? It's this document. This one. Just give it a copy. Members, we are not going to go through word by word. For instance, the mandate of the committee, we are familiar with that, the vision and mission. The oversight role that we need to play. The description of the mandate and function, the issue of the NYDA, except that, yeah, we agreed that we need to call them so they can clarify some issues for us. We agree with that one. The first plan, you remember the first plan? The budget. Vote consideration. Tell me, Nelisa, we are going to, or have we, or are we still going to put this in the ATC?
After adoption.
After adoption, eh? Okay. The bills considered by the committee. No legislation was considered by the committee. We are in agreement with that. We also agree that the committee did not consider any agreements, international agreements. Though we have old ones, but we did not as a committee consider new ones. Local and overseas trips. We didn't undertake any trips, international study groups, none, conferences, workshops, seminars. The committee did not attend any. Were you not supposed to put, where do you put the issue of public hearing? Why don't they appear yet? Yet that? Where? Melissa, you must number your pages. Does it appear there? Yes, Kashifa?
Chairperson, just to remind Chairperson, that Chairperson actually presented at the GAP seminar. And I mean, you were invited as a Chairperson of the committee, so that needs to be inserted.
The one that was here. Members, you have the right to talk while we go through this. Okay. The report of the independent complaints
Directorate, we agree with the choice. Can I be reminded on this one? The report on the financial statement, what is that? Which annual report?
Okay.
We are now on the election of the chairperson. We agree with all what we see there. The stock plan of the NYDA, discussion in the job program, briefing by UNICEF and others, briefing by the Department of Police and Child Rights, briefing by the Department of Justice, presentation by Solomon, briefing by the Department of Social Development, briefing by the Department of Women, briefing by the NYDA, public hearings on the Domestic Violence Act, agenda. What is this cancellation postponed meeting? Have we ever canceled a meeting?
Yes.
We have?
Yes, that's what we
have. This one?
Yes.
Okay. We have not received any sponsors. Budget of the committee. Do we all agree on that report? I think it's a true reflection of what took place. Are we in agreement? We have adopted the 70. Not yet? Or it was moved and who supported? Kiki. Well moved and Kiki supported. Can we then, are there any other issues that are left? Kashifa?
Just I noted to Nelisa that in the ATC yesterday, it was noted the ITU document. So there was a resolution around youth participation and specific reference to our committee is that in terms of the resolution taken at IPU, we need to look at that and it's concerning youth participation. But I'm not quite sure what that entails in terms of us looking at it, whether we comment and give a report or in terms of the IPU delegation, because the next IPU is in a few weeks' time. So that has to be prioritized probably by the next committee meeting.
And just for information sake, we need to put at the back of our minds that sometime, I'm not sure when, there could be a legislation on adult prostitution that could be coming up. So we could just keep in mind that there could be such a legislation that could be coming.
Besides that, the human trafficking will be coming up.
Okay. Then we keep that in mind, very sensitive and emotional issue as well. It would be, I think it goes to justice. I'm sure we will be expected to participate there as this committee. What is your name?
My name is Gary Jefferson. Gary.
Gary?
Yeah.
Okay, Gary.
I spoke to you earlier before the meeting started on the meeting next week and the week after of the 15 years of implementation of the Beijing at the United Nations. Sorry, ma'am. I spoke to you earlier this morning before the meeting about the 15 years of the implementation of the Beijing Declaration at the United Nations, and I just read through the report and I highlighted a few sections for you. I don't know if you would like to discuss that with the committee or that's an important issue to raise.
Where do I start? I don't know how to handle this one, but apparently there's this conference in New York, and we have not been invited as a committee. There was just an invitation that came to me as a chairperson, but I didn't find it quite suitable. I was of the opinion that if we are invited, we'll be invited as parliament, and I had thought that perhaps that such an invitation will go through the speaker, because then we would need a parliament delegation to go there, not only the chair. That's how I see it. And also, as we sit here, the report is being discussed, and we are not part of that discussion. I don't know if there's a meeting held somewhere here in Parliament. We are not part, and I'm not sure of the process, what was supposed to happen, but I'm of the opinion that by now we should have seen the report, what it looks like. I mean, it's a country's report. How do you take it there without even this committee seeing it? I don't know when they will correct the flaws. Gary just showed me they still refer to the status of women, the joint committee and the joint committee. And I don't think that is acceptable. But then we are sitting here because we were not invited to that meeting. So I'm not sure what I'm supposed to say about this, but I find it so wrong. And unfortunately, I think those that are going will be leaving either Friday or Saturday, or some of them have left already. And we are not part of that. No, I mean the from the department side. And what I couldn't understand when I heard this, I heard that there is 40 people that are coming to make a presentation on the report. But I'm not sure who are the 40 and who are they presenting to, if not us. So I'm not sure what to say on this one. And Honorable Robinson?
Thank you, Chair. I just want to sort of officially note my concern about this as well. I agree with what you're saying. I have also heard rumblings about trips that are taking place and so on, but I really feel that this committee has been sidelined from the beginning. We are having ministerial officials doing everything on behalf of us, but we are not participants. We read about reports, we read about things that have done in the press, but we are not part of it. And if I think we go back to the Beijing commitment, that was a full parliamentary delegation that involved everybody, you know, government plus opposition. And we all have a mandate from our voters. And I think we're in agreement here. We are not paying petty politics. We want to be represented. So I don't know whether it's too late to do anything about this particular one, but really we cannot allow this to continue. This committee needs to participate fully and not to read about events afterwards. So if you could take that as my official objection and concern, I'd be very grateful. Thank you.
Before coming to the meeting, myself and Honorable Mother, we had a meeting with the chief whip of the NCLP, because she wanted to get information from us on this. And we told her that no, we were not invited. Then she immediately tried to get hold of the minister, but the minister was unavailable, and she finally got Dr. Conaghy.
Mm-hmm.
But while they were chatting on the phone, Ellen did say that, though she thinks it's an oversight, Parliament should have been invited. So So I don't know whether they're in the process of correcting it, because she did say she will try and see if it cannot be corrected.
I think it is correct, because with last year, they had Beijing plus 10. And then the gender machinery went, but Parliament separately, because look, they came together in one meeting. And then certain provinces were allowed to go, because I know Eastern Cape couldn't go, because they were with, you know, they went out with Parliament the year before. So I think it is correct that Parliament should be invited. And they shouldn't, we shouldn't regard it as an oversight, because when it comes to these things, you know, we should be seen as a committee that is facilitating the rights of women, children, persons with disabilities, and youth. Thank you.
Perhaps by the end of the day we would know what is supposed to happen. Then you will get feedback. I'll try and get Elisa to tell you what is happening, but don't take it negative and think that I knew what was going on. I didn't know as well. I was just as blank as the chair, and even Honorable Mami was just as blank. Yes, Honorable Dorothy.
Yes, Chair, just to agree on what you were saying. I think, you know, in the past, there have been this type of, overseas trips whereby women were represented without their knowledge. And people go there and they come back, they don't report anywhere. And I think we must change it as this committee. Because, for instance, even our minister is supposed to share with us what is it that he's going to be saying. Because, I mean, she's going to be representing us. And I don't think it's only us here. Maybe even if you could call, if they could call a multi-party women's caucus to come and inform it, and so that maybe addition, subtractions can be done from there. And I think we really need to voice it out.
So then on that note, can we formally close the meeting?
Thank you.